I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:36 p.m. on Thursday, April 9th, 2026. Present today, we have Representative Hannon, Co-Chair Foster, Co-Chair Josephson, myself, Co-Chair Shragi. Expecting other members to join us shortly, including Rep. Galvin by telephone. Also here for our committee today to help us with behind-the-scenes work is Committee Assistant Helen Phillips, Paige Tallulah-Stufka, Secretary Bree Wiley, Secretary Leah Frazier, and our LIO moderator, Emily Mesh. Thank you for being with us today. Please remember to mute your cell phones if you have not done so already. Today, we will hear a presentation from the Bond Reimbursement and Grant Review Committee, which plays a key role in the school major maintenance and new school construction process. To help us with our presentation today, we have from the Department of Education, Aaliyah Preston here in the room, and joining us online will be Heather Heineken, Finance and Support Services Director, Michael Budakoffer, Facilities Manager, as well as committee members Kevin Lyon, Ranzen Anania, I hope I'm saying that right, and Randy Williams. And I would also like to note that one of our committee members, Representative Galvin, also serves on the Berger Committee. Ms. Preston, thanks for coming forward already. If you could please put your name on the record and begin with the presentation and direct us through this. And also before you do, we've been joined by Representative Stapp and Representative Allard. Go ahead and move us forward.
For the record, my name is Aaliyah Preston, and I am the Ledge Liaison for the Department of Education and Early Development. And presenting today is Heather Heineken.
Great. And we've been joined by Rep. Jimmy. Please continue. Please continue when you're ready.
For the record is Aaliyah Preston for the Department of Education and Early Development. Is Heather online, please?
She is. Ms. Heineken, do you want to take us away here?
Thank you. Thank you, Co-Chair Shragi, and good afternoon, Chair Foster, Chair Josephson, and members of the House Finance Committee. Just for the record, we also have the Commissioner, Dina Bishop, online available for questions as well. For the record, my name is Heather Heineken. I'm the Director of Finance and Support Services with the Department of Education and Early Development. Online with me today is Michael Budakoffer, our Facilities Manager. Committee members online include Kevin Lyon, who is a member with Urban or Rural School Facilities Management and the Director of Planning and Operations at Kenai Borough School District. We have Brandon Anania, a public representative and the facilities director for Crestbrook School District. And finally, Randy Williams holds the seat of a member with a professional degree and experience in school construction, and he is a mechanical engineer at RESPECT. In addition to the members who are online, we also have, as you mentioned, Representative Elise Galvin, Senator Matt Clayman, Larry Morris, who is a member with experience in urban or rural school facilities management and currently is the planning and design supervisor at Anchorage School District, and also Douglas Heyman, a public representative and an administrator at Kenai Borough School District. We have one vacant seat on the committee that we are in the process of filling. Today, I will provide a brief overview of the Bond Reimbursement and Grant Review Committee, commonly referred to as the BRGR or Berger Committee. Next slide, please. We always like to begin with the department's mission, vision, and purpose. And while school construction and major maintenance may not always be viewed as part of a student's daily learning experience, they are foundational. Our role is to provide the resources, structure, and oversight that ensure students have safe, functional environments where learning can occur every day. And this work directly supports the department's purpose to provide information, resources, and leadership in support of an excellent education for every student. Next slide, please. And this slide highlights the Alaska Education Challenge and the department's 5 shared strategic priorities. These priorities focus on the students' outcomes, but it's important to recognize they will be difficult to achieve without safe and reliable school facilities. Whether it's reading proficiency, workforce readiness, or student well-being, those outcomes depend on an environment that are operational, warm, and structurally sound. and facilities are the platform to make all of this happen. Next slide, please. So here are a few of our commonly used acronyms, and you may hear me mention them today during the presentation, just for reference. So next slide, please. Today's presentation will walk through the creation and history of the Burger Committee, the evolution of the CIP application, committee composition, and both department and committee responsibilities. We'll conclude with a summary of last week's Burger meeting results and a highlight key changes moving forward. Next slide, please. The Burger Committee was established in statute under AS 1411-014 in 1993. It established a 9-member bond reimbursement and grant review committee. And the purpose of this committee is to review the department's CIP priorities, make recommendations concerning grants and bond reimbursement project requests, develop criteria for cost-effective school construction, analyze existing prototypical school designs, establish a grant application form, establish a method of ranking projects, recommend to the board necessary changes to the approval process for school construction grants and for projects for which bond reimbursement is requested, and then set the standards for school energy efficiency that minimize long-term energy and operational costs. In addition, regulations under 4 AAC 31 provide the framework for how those responsibilities are implemented, defining the application requirements, the eligibility, the scoring criteria, and facility standards. Together, statute and regulation ensure the process is structured, transparent, and consistently applied statewide.
I'm going to pause you for just one moment to acknowledge that Representative Tomaszewski and Representative Bynum have both joined us. Please continue.
Thank you. For the record, Heather Heineken. And we're on slide 7 now. Over the past 30 years, the BRGR has established a core framework still used today. This includes the CIP application, the scoring methodology, and ranking process, along with facility standards and maintenance classifications. The committee has developed foundational tools such as preventative maintenance guidelines, condition surveys, and cost modeling specific to Alaska's unique construction environment. They continue to analyze existing prototypical school designs, recognizing the regional diversity, develop criteria for cost-effective school construction, and more recently have set standards for the school energy efficiency to minimize long-term energy and operating costs. These efforts have created a system that is both structured and adaptable over time. Next slide, please. The application and scoring process have been refined to rely more heavily on objective, data-driven criteria, reducing subjectivity in how projects are evaluated. We've also expanded technical guidance, particularly around the energy efficiency and project standards. We've increased stakeholder engagement through public comment and coordination with industry professionals. And the goal has been to improve consistency, transparency, and overall confidence in the process. Next slide, please.
Director Heineken, I have a question for you. In terms of modernizing and standardizing the process, one of the things I've heard from other legislators and members of the community in recent months is that there's a major challenge in schools being able to adequately submit projects for scoring. I think due to both some of the technical requirements and the complexity of doing so and because of the cost, in terms of expanded policy and technical guidance and increased stakeholder engagement, are you providing any technical support or other support to the schools and helping them to support submit projects for consideration? Or is this simply in terms of helping to provide more technical guidance around energy efficiency? Can you talk about whether that extends to schools in their application process?
Sure. to Chair Shiragi. Thank you for the question. Just for reference, I've been in the department a short period, about a year and a half. And over the course of the year and a half I've been there, some of that we have tried to do, we continue to do outreach every spring, and this has been ongoing for many, many years. We do a CIP application workshop that the department does. And I should clarify, most of this support work that you're referencing is done more by the department than by the Burger Committee. However, the Burger Committee members would absolutely help support any district that needed help. But this is department level work. We do a CIP application process. Last year in the spring, we held regularly meetings where people could come in and ask Q&A on how to go through the process. And we will answer any questions up until that September 1st deadline to help support districts to put the best application forward that they can possibly put forward. Once the September 1st deadline hits, we can no longer provide details, obviously, because we're in the process of reviewing and evaluating the application.
Okay, thank you. Please continue.
Thank you. So slide 9 is where we should be. And the Burger Committee is made up of 9 members as defined in statute. This includes the commissioner or her designee, 2 legislative members, and 6 public members with expertise in construction, facilities management, and public representation. This composition is intentional, and it brings together technical expertise, policy perspective, and public accountability to support balanced decision making. Next slide, please. The department's role is to implement the CIP process. This includes reviewing district applications, verifying eligibility, applying the established rating criteria, and developing the statewide priority list. We also ensure projects align with statute, are cost-effective, and meet facility standards. Equally important, we facilitate the public process, publishing proposed lists, conducting hearings, and producing the annual school capital project funding report required under statute. Next slide, please. So looking ahead from our meeting, these are the outcomes of our meeting that was held on April 2nd and 3rd in Juneau. Looking ahead, we're proposing updates to the CIP application for the FY28 rating period. One of the most significant changes is shifting from weighted average age to a facility conditioning index, or FCI. This will allow us to measure actual building condition rather than relying solely on the age as a proxy, which improves our ability to identify true need. We're also increasing emphasis on life safety concerns, ensuring that projects addressing structural issues, code deficiency, and safety risks rise more clearly to the top. Next slide, please. Additional changes focus on improving how we evaluate project scope and accessibility. We are introducing more consistent analysis of space utilization to ensure facilities are appropriately sized for the student population. We're also redistributing points within the application to better support districts that may not have the resources to fully develop projects to later design stages. This is intended to help level the playing field and ensure smaller or rural districts can compete more effectively for funding.
Director Heineken, can you expand on that and tell me a little bit more about how redistributing points to give more points for concept and schematic design levels the playing field? Is it that schools are more able to get to that stage and they're just not able to put forward a project that in its entirety and that this smaller stage or kind of stage gating it helps break it up and make it easier? How does this work? How does that actually address the issue?
Thank you, Chair Shiragi, for the question. So there's been conversations heard in some public meetings that several of the projects are reimbursable projects. So some districts have the funds to put the projects forward, if you put a project forward that is completed, the application is a much more complete application because you know all of the details. So they effectively get higher points for a project that's already done, as opposed to a district that doesn't have the capital funds available to put to pay for a project in advance and then get reimbursed. So the different level, we give different levels of points for the design concept as opposed to different types of drawings and then obviously completed projects. So instead of maybe giving them, and I don't have the points breakout in front of me, but instead of giving them 10 points for 35% drawings, we're going to lower that. We're going to shift that out a little bit so that the 10 points are at a lower level. Or, and I think I said that backwards. If you get 10 points at 65%, well, now we're going to give 10 points at 35%. So that those who can get a little bit further in the process are getting the points. The key here is to not punish those who are doing good work, but also to reward those who don't have the ability to get there. So it's the intent is to make it a little bit more equitable game for them.
Okay, thank you. Representative Allard.
I apologize. Chair, I have a question in regards to this presentation. Are we going to have Deed in front of us again? Before I don't know that we have a lot of time, and I have a ton of questions, and I just don't want to take up the body's time if we are going to have them back in front of us.
Well, Representative Allard, I'd note that we do have a shorter presentation today. I think we have a bit of time for questions, and that Commissioner Bishop is online. So if you would like to talk to Deed now or ask questions of Deed now, I think that would be appropriate.
Okay.
I don't know when they will be next before us.
Okay.
Do you want to ask a question now, Rep. Allard?
Yeah, I'm a little bit concerned of what the I need a moment.
Yeah.
And then I'll come back to you. Thank you.
Commissioner, Director Heineken, please continue.
Sure. So we're on slide 13 now, please. So historically, as we move forward, the Berger, the Berger Committee has continued to evolve and maintain fairness, transparency, and cost effectiveness. The proposed changes for FY28 are intended to better reflect the realities of aging infrastructure across the state, address disparities between districts, and ensure that the highest risk, highest need projects are prioritized. And one thing I'd like to mention here is this is an annual process. So next year in April, the Berger Committee will get together and look at the application, look at the changes we made this year, come together with other recommendations, if there are any, and continue to help this process evolve into something that that really can address all the needs in the state. And so next slide, please. And with that, I'd just like to thank you for your time and opportunity to provide the overview today. We're happy to answer any questions. And again, I've got several committee members online and Michael Butikofer, who leads the actual ranking process.
Very good. Thank you, Director Heineken. I have a couple questions, but I'd like to go to committee members first, if members have questions. And I believe Rep. Allard would like to get in the queue. Rep. Allard.
Thank you. And through the chair, is Commissioner Bishop, is she still online?
I believe so, Representative Allard.
Okay. I'm waiting for a document to come back because can you circle back around? I want to make sure what I ask is accurate on that document.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And it just so happens Rep. Bynum would like to get a question in. Rep. Bynum.
Well, thank you, Co-Chair Schrage. Appreciate that. Through the chair, is Ms. Heineken on the phone? That's who? Yes.
Director Heineken.
Director Heineken, thank you for being here, giving us this presentation. I know that this is part of the budget cycle that I really appreciate is when we get into the capital budget. I think it's one of the most overlooked portions of what we do here. When we talk about school capital and what we're going to need throughout the state, I think it's an important conversation to start having. And one of those important conversations is on slide 12. So I was hoping that maybe we could go in a little bit more detail when we talk about the right sizing of facilities requiring the space per ADM. I know that this is something I've looked at before, and when we talk about school design, we start talking about students per square foot, whether it's elementary or high school, there's going to be differences. And I was just hoping that you might be able to talk a little bit more in depth about some of these issues on here with the overbuilding, underutilization, and at capacity. I know that in my district, this is something that we are looking at very closely, and our school board has made some very tough decisions on closing two schools because of capacity. So I'd like a little bit more input from the department.
Director Heineken?
Thank you. Through the chair to Representative Bynum. Thank you for that question. I want to talk at a high level, and we have some experts on here who can speak at more detail if we'd like it. At the department level, statute allows us, when we're doing the evaluation, to make modifications to projects. So we take that opportunity to look and see. The last thing we want to do is overbuild a school. Because their ADM is also what has to support the operations and maintenance of that facility. And if they don't have the student body to help generate the revenue for that, then they have multiple, problems. But we also don't want to, obviously we don't want to have unhoused students and have population issues. So we do look very closely at the formulas, and it is very formula driven on how many students, what grades, what types of classrooms. But one of the challenges that we do run into is that in many of our most rural communities, these school facilities are more than a school. They provide, I'll use the Western Storms as an example. They were the place for refuge during the typhoons. And so we are mindful of that, where obviously that's not the main focus, to provide the community support, but we also want to make sure that the school does meet the need of the entire community when it's necessary. So, and then if sometimes if we look at the capacity of a school, it may warrant, based on our calculations, they no longer have a gym. So we have to keep, we try to balance all of these things, and, you know, ultimately our goal is to be fiscally responsible and mindful of the state need. And so we try to make that balance through the whole, process.
Follow up.
Representative Bynum, follow up.
Yes. Thank you through the chair. I was thinking about that when we talk about like right sizing a facility and then other uses. And I know there's been instances where a school district might overbuild, as you would say. Those fixed costs then remain the same. Then those pressures get put on the state through our foundation formula. And so I was wondering if there was any kind of review of saying, of separating out what those expenses would be and putting that oversizing back out of the out of funding from the foundation. You'd given an example of maybe in a small village or a small community that we build the school, but the school is then used for other things or other space, and that's very valid, very necessary. But the foundation formula is supporting that ultimately, and that's putting pressure on teachers and our kids as far as being able to make sure we have the right revenue, foundation monies available for teaching. Has there been any just conversation about trying to separate out those other uses, and even if the state is still providing the funding, but isolating them so that we can recognize what's actually a true space per ADM for the purposes of education versus maybe other purposes?
Director Heineken?
Through the chair to Representative Bynum. We in the department have had some very high-level conversation. I believe maybe you mentioned this in a previous hearing, and so we have talked about it a little bit, but no formal research has been done to identify what those costs or what that usage are. It's certainly something that I can take back to my team, and we can see about gathering that information.
A quick follow-up?
Yeah, follow-up, Bynum.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Shragi, through the chair. Yeah, I obviously want our local school districts to be able to identify what they need for space, and if they want to have more space available and they're willing to pay for it, they should be able to do that. But I don't want it to impact disparity tests, as an example. And I also, want to make sure that those other uses are there if it's needed. But we, I want a good focus on this space per ADM to make sure that we're putting the dollars directly toward the child's education. But with that being said, we have a task force that was developed under HB 57 to kind of try to address this issue among many other issues. Has the task force reached out to the department at all to specifically request information to this topic? And then a second part of that is to the topic of funding overall and getting the department's direct engagement in doing these evaluations.
Director Heineken.
Through the chair to Representative Bynum, we did provide a capital presentation, not specifically the BRGR, but we did have a capital presentation to the task force a few weeks ago. And I don't believe we've been asked for this specific question to gather that information.
One last follow-up?
Yeah, I know that when we talked about the importance of including the task force in HB 57, it was specifically to try to identify not only the foundation formula, but utilization of facilities and those school factors. And I think that the people that are probably the best positioned to provide detailed information is the department. And, my stance before when we were talking about this bill was that I think it's important that we have the task force to ask those types of questions. But I also at that same time said I felt like it was the full responsibility of the department to be sharing with the legislature recommendations for needed changes. And so I'm not sure what that specific capital presentation was. I'll go back and I'll try to watch that. But I don't know that that's sufficient for the kind of crisis that we're in statewide to be able to answer the questions on what do we need for foundation formula? What do we need for energy cost in our communities? We've talked about today on the floor, pupil transportation. A lot of that's formula driven, and it needs to be that way because of the disparity test that we need to apply. But, I'm relying heavily on the department to help us out there. So is there ongoing efforts beyond what you've given us here today to try to answer some of those questions, even at a high level?
Director Heineken?
Through the chair to Representative Bynum, when we receive requests, we do provide information that we have available to us. The particular question you asked about school and community usage, that would require us reaching out to the districts, and we have not taken that action. But I'm not aware of that being a direct request. We certainly do try to respond to any questions or inquiries that come to us and provide all the information that we have available to us.
Last
follow-up, Rep. Bynum. But before we go to you, let me just take a moment to note that Rep. Galvin joined us shortly before 2 o'clock. Cool. Rep. Bynum, please
continue. Thank you, Co-Chair Shragi. So, Director, I think what I'm getting from that answer is that basically that the response will be based on an inquiry basis. So meaning that the legislature, if these are things we're concerned about, that we would have to formally ask for the department to say, do an evaluation on how we're structurally funding not only facilities, but education in general, and then give us guidance. Am I misinterpreting what you're saying?
Director Heineken?
Through the chair to Representative Bynum, I would say you're not misinterpreting what I'm saying. I'm going to say that I've had three vacancies in the last 6 months. So if I had full capacity, it might be something that we would pursue a little bit further on our own. But right now, it's without it being a formal request, we haven't had the capacity to pursue it any further.
Thank you.
Representative Ballard, did you want back in the queue at this point?
Yeah, thank you.
Representative Ballard.
So, and I'm not really sure, maybe the commissioner can, I came into some information that's quite alarming. So maybe Commissioner Bishop could answer these questions. Commissioner Bishop, are you on the line still?
Commissioner Bishop.
Through the chair, yes, I am here.
Okay. Representative Ballard.
Thank you. And through the chair, thank you, Co-Chair Schrage. So I have some documents in front of me, and my staff was doing some research, and we went back to September of 2022 with the debt bond reimbursement. And it looks like I don't think you were the superintendent any longer, and I believe you weren't even the commissioner. I think you had taken some time off. I'm concerned about the debt bond reimbursement that, if I'm not mistaken, the ASD did not get reimbursed for quite a few years. I think it was, can you tell me which those years are? Then they finally got reimbursed in 2022, Commissioner?
Commissioner Bishop?
Through the chair to Representative Allard, yes. When I was superintendent in all districts, and when it was some lean years, there was a hiatus, if you will, on bond debt reimbursement at the state level. And those years were 17, 20, 21, and 22. But the state then did repay those.
May I do some follow-ups?
Yep, Representative Allard.
Okay, so then the state in 17, 20, 21, and 22 that the state hadn't paid, we did reimburse that in... It looks like it came forward in 2022. Okay, so then my question would be, when Anchorage School District was reimbursed the state bond reimbursement, they had a couple of options on what to do with those reimbursements. And I'm looking at a memo from the Anchorage School District. And on the memo, it gives three different options that can return the funds to Anchorage taxpayers via some holiday tax. They could also do some capital projects and securities. And then they have another option where they can do conjunction with option two to be allocated by the school board. So my question is, do you recall what I know what they did with it, but I want to know on record, do you know what they did with those funds? I think it was almost 70. They have like 79 million in savings right now. Can you tell me what they did with those funds?
Commissioner Bishop,
please.
Through the chair to Representative Allard, yes, this actually occurred in FY23, so it was the fall, I believe, of 22, but school year 23. Mm-hmm. And the Anchorage School District retained, the funds, I believe, for projects in a capital savings account.
Okay, so, and then I'm going to go into a couple of the capital project issues too.
Sure, Representative Ballard.
Thank you, I appreciate that, Co-Chair. So for clarification, instead of reimbursing the taxpayers, when the school district was reimbursed for debt bond reimbursement, they put it in the savings, and I believe there's 79 million in there. So not only did we increase our taxes to the taxpayers in the Anchorage School District, but they also kept the money as well, and they have it in a savings account currently, correct?
Commissioner Bishop?
Through the chair to Representative Allard, yes, I don't know, but I do know, in their audit, there is a capital savings account for, over $70 million, and the my guess is that the original funds did come from the reimbursement. Mm-hmm. The issue came up from a constituent in regard to Inlet View, of how Inlet View was paid for, and that's, I believe, the school board shared that.
Okay.
That they utilized some of it for Inlet View.
May I?
Got one more.
Thank
Representative
you.
Ballard, then we'll go back to Representative Bynum.
Okay, so then that's fair. Thank you. So if I'm not mistaken, the school board or the school district, let's go there just because I'm not sure which who did what, gave $9 million to Inlet View Elementary School because the voters voted it down. But in actuality, the school, the ASD accessed money from the debt reimbursement, and it actually cost $40 million to rebuild that school. Is there a sleight of hands or some change of like a shell game that I'm missing? Because I'm looking at the numbers and I'm concerned.
Commissioner Bishop, is there a shell game?
I didn't say sludge fund, so that's
through
good.
The chair to Representative Allard, the decisions and things like that are all made, just so you know, at the capital level at Anchorage School District. I believe they might be the only district at the time when we were there, when I was there, that we had our own capital.
Okay.
When the state reimbursed for their lapsed debt, they reimbursed boroughs and other cities that run their bond debt. Anchorage was the only one, I believe, that probably went because they handled their own construction at ASD. Mm. But it was the city that would have collected the taxes. So I don't know, but certainly there was a vote at the board level. I'm not sure if there was a vote at the city level.
And just a quick comment, then if you can loop back around when you get a second.
Yep, quick comment, Rep. Ballard.
Thank you. So it sounds like to me that the school district was in debt with bonds. They were then charged the taxpayers, increased our property taxes. Then the state finally came around the fall of 2023, reimbursed the school district. And instead of the school district reimbursing the taxpayers, they kept it and shuffled all that money into a savings account. Okay, I'll wait and I'll come back in.
Commissioner Bishop, do you know whether or not the bonds that were reimbursed by the state when they were originally incurred by the municipality of Anchorage, if that debt was incurred during the period at which there was still bond reimbursement from the state?
I have it here, and I will pass it out to the committee.
Commissioner
Representative
Bishop.
Through the chair, the bond debt that was held was for prior bonds that we did. So in ASD, we passed bonds when I worked there that were 100%, and we knew they were 100%. The bond debt reimbursement program had already been on hiatus. I believe the funds that the state repaid were for 20 years back, that prior bonds that were passed with the knowledge of 60-40 when the program was in place. So the state couldn't pay for 4 years. I do know that working with the city mayor, we did have to raise taxes. We also used some of our savings in ASD to cover a portion of it, but taxes had to be raised. I already left the school district. I was not paying attention to anything anymore. And I do know, though, when the question came to me when I began to work, I did see that the state did reimburse all borough cities and, of course, the Anchorage School District. Anchorage School District does not have the authority to place a levy, so the levy would have been made by the city to increase the state share. So basically, the local citizens had to take on the share that was promised from like 20 years ago. Those were not the recent bonds. They were prior bonds. Thanks. The recent levies that were passed had the 100% on it, and taxpayers would have known that. So the rebate for prior 20, 30-year-old bonds went to Anchorage, I believe, the school district, and then they decided, they made plans for it.
Okay.
Thank you very much. And one additional question before we go to Representative Bynum. Commissioner Bishop, are you aware of any other school districts that have similar capital savings accounts?
That's a great question, Chair. I don't – most districts have savings accounts, not to that that amount. That's quite a large amount for a capital savings account.
Okay, so they didn't reimburse.
I'm sorry, Commissioner Bishop, it was a little hard to hear you. Did you say not of the same amount, or that other districts do not have funds of a similar purpose?
There are, if school districts and school boards would like to place money into savings accounts for capital, they can do that. If they have, they would be basically taking their operational funds and placing them into a capital account. So that is absolutely allowable on the chart of accounts. They would make that designation. These funds came about just a little bit differently.
Okay. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Shragi, through the chair. Thank you, Commissioner, for being here and available to us. I think that means a lot to us to have the Commissioner available and all your staff. So just really quick, and I apologize if it had previously been covered in the presentation, but I don't believe that it was. We're talking a lot about school bond debt reimbursement. We're talking about capital investments in schools and grant programs. When we talk about this, obviously we have a different system of how we fund things in the state. We have REAAs, and then we also have city and borough school districts. So in an REAA, who is responsible for the facilities and the cost of those facilities?
Commissioner, or is that better for Director Heineken?
Thank you. Through the chair to Representative Bynum. Once the school is built, it is the local school district that is responsible. However, we do have some facilities are actually, the title has not been transferred over to the local REAA, and the state continues to hold that title, but the operation of the school and the major maintenance, things like that, are the responsibility of the school district.
Follow-up,
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Shragi. So when we need the major school maintenance on those REAA facilities, are we utilizing mechanisms like school bond debt reimbursement or bonds, or are we using major school maintenance list direct funding from the legislature through a capital program?
Commissioner Bishop?
Thank you, Chair. Through the chair to Representative Bynum, now I understand your question. So for REAAs, there would not be a local ability to levy a tax. So for REAAs, they could be on the major maintenance or capital list or the REAA fund, which is a new fund to fund schools, which is directly associated with the bond debt reimbursement program.
Perfect. Now I get to where I'm going. I'm driving down the road here. I'm trying to get to the location. So thank you for that. So now when we look at turn the page and we look at city and boroughs and actual school districts that are covered under that city and borough model, those facilities without school bond debt reimbursement in the conversation, who's responsible for the building that the school resides in?
Commissioner?
Thank you. Through the chair to Representative Bynum. That would depend on how it's set up for the Anchorage School District, because they have their own capital and major maintenance department. That would be the Anchorage School District. I'm familiar with that. In the Mat-Su School District, the buildings are actually owned by the city. The borough, and they work when you want to build and do that major maintenance, the city and borough is involved with that project. In places like Kenai, I've talked to superintendent there, and his borough really does a lion's share. That's why that his borough gives a lot of in-kind. His maintenance is run out of his borough. So each individual school district is kind of set up in a different manner in regard to those larger cities.
Perfect. Follow-up. Thank you, through the chair. So when we start talking about the actual construction and cost of these schools, one of the things that comes to mind, and I don't know that the public is really aware of this, but is it, you know, the fact of, you know, foundation formula money, what is its intended purpose? And should it be used for the cost of the actual facility as opposed to minor maintenance and facilities? And then when we have these bonds going out, or a borough directly pays or a city directly pays for constructions of a facility, the expectation of participating in a bond debt reimbursement program. Can you comment briefly about foundation formula money being used for the purposes of actual facility cost? What are the limitations? And then what is the expectation? That's the part one. Part two, expectation of a school district for bond debt reimbursement and help offsetting setting the cost of an actual facility.
Commissioner?
Sure. Thank you, Chair, to Representative Bynum. So in any budget, you would budget in your maintenance fees and also the care of the facility, the heating, the utilities, things like that, any other minor maintenance care such as painting, repainting a room that occurs often in schools, cutting the grass, making sure that you're tidying up, you know, keeping, you know, your spigots and spouts clear from your foundation. So all of those minor things are naturally built into your operating budget that is from the foundation formula. Items over $50,000 are generally established for major maintenance, which would be either bonded. And at this time, you know, I believe it's 50-50 or 50-40. The state, depending on the project and approval of the project, the state would pick up 40% or 50. In the past, it's been 60-40 and 70-30. So that local government and the state would each share in the cost of that major maintenance. However, if a district does not bond, they can place their facilities on, you know, the major maintenance and capital list, just in the regular six-year CIP list that they keep up. Then they would do an application, and similar to what Director Heineken shared, they would be ranked. So there's a different opportunity that city schools and boroughs, anybody that has a tax base, you have. You can compete that way with your local government, if you will, in being able to pass a bond and take on that the portion of those funds to keep up your schools. I think that was your question. What does that look like and what is the expectation? Generally, minor maintenance and operations is the expectation for foundation formula. Major maintenance, over $50,000 in inputs into the school, you would begin to think about major maintenance.
One follow.
Yeah, one last one follow. Final. Yep.
Thank you, Co-Chair. And so when we talk about the, you know, the school district in practical application has basically two options, and we're assuming this is a city borough, not an REAA. But they have a couple options there. They can take it on themselves and take on that obligation and put it to taxpayers. They can use their general funds to pay for some of those things if they don't do a bond. But when they go out and get a bond debt reimbursement, I know that in years past there's been this, the school district is operating, working with the borough, for example, down where I'm at. And Ketchikan, you know, the school district works with the borough specifically for the facilities. And there's some expectation for that bond debt reimbursement. But as we all know, it is subject to appropriation. As far as you're aware, is there any obligation once we've entered into these agreements to actually pay the money at some point? Is it a matter of timing, or is it just purely subject to appropriation and a school district might ultimately be on the hook for covering those costs on an ad hoc basis?
Commissioner?
Thank you, Chair, to Representative Bynum. I believe in 2017, when the state did not pay its share from bonds that were passed years ago, that was a shock. That was the first time. Yeah. However, in 2022, the state repaid all city boroughs and governments that took out bonds. So they repaid their debt, which was a nice thing to have happen. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't keep a local district from participating. For instance, Anchorage, when I was there, and this is what brought up the BRGR issues. When I was in Anchorage, we built new roofs. We kept our roofs up. We sold bonds for 100% because the state program was put on hiatus. So our community supported bonds and like safety vestibules for roofs and safety vestibules. So they were paid for and they were completed. And then because they're completed projects, they're then applied for on the CIP list. And then they score very high on the CIP list because the safety vestibule is a safety and it's a project that's already complete. So then the state reimburses through the major maintenance, and then the district then can then reinvest those major maintenance funds into other things. And that's, I think, generally what's been happening. So there's different avenues based on the statutes that are allowed. And so you can actually do both. If you incur all the bond yourself in a community, you could still apply for CIP and major maintenance funds at the state level and receive them. There's evidence of that, that those have scored high and received payments.
Thank you, through the chair, if it's okay.
Yep,
fine. Just as a quick follow-up to that, really what I was trying to ask or get at is there an obligation once we've entered into a bond debt reimbursement agreement, is there an obligation of the state to actually reimburse that bond at whatever rate was set, or is it just subject to appropriation? Because I know there were years where schools were relying on that money and they didn't get it, and thankfully at some point they got reimbursed on it, but the local school district has to carry that cost year after year with uncertainty. And so, when I was on the borough assembly, there was this question, well, I don't know if we'll ever get the money, and the borough had to carry that cost. And so I was wondering, is this just subject to appropriation from your understanding, or is at some point are we obligated to pay those agreements?
Commissioner Bishop.
Thank you, Chair Schwage. It is a subject to appropriation, and to your point, it is, I believe, each and every year when the small language, the tiny language on those bond packages of levies that go out do share that notice. So, it is a risk that boroughs, you would say, take, because it's the borough or the city that has to go back and raise taxes. And that was what Member Allard was getting at, that when it wasn't paid, the city did raise taxes on its residents.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think does a good job of demonstrating the way in which the state and our local municipalities are intertwined in the financial impact that can be put onto our municipalities when the state pulls back state-level support for things like school maintenance. Representative Allard?
Thank you. Commissioner Bishop, I have a question in regards to the CIP. I'm looking at some documents, and I will hand them all out to the committee members to get them copies. But it looks like there was one dated in February 24, 2026, and then the Superintendent Bryant asked the school board to pass some capital projects, and I'm a little bit concerned because I'm just going to read one. One of the capital projects was for a pre-K playground, and another one was for e-lights. And I'm trying to figure out, I don't know where that falls under capital projects. Does a playground fall under capital projects? And
Commissioner Bishop?
Through the chair to Representative Allard, a district could put in for anything that they'd like. A playground would be ranked really low according to the needs. As you know, we have mold in some of our schools, and we're trying to abate that. I did get some calls on that. And although it says, just because the money's scarce, but although it says that it's from the capital improvement project, it is not from the local, it's from their reimbursements from past projects. So Anchorage was reimbursed for their roofs and their vestibules, and they were able to then reinvest the money into their other projects that they desired because the original bond was passed. Then they were reimbursed, and then they could invest. So although I did get that at a time, and I know it was misleading because it said it was a department CIP program, wouldn't have ranked high for the department, but essentially it is CIP money because it was reimbursed from a different project that they're redirecting.
I just have one last question and then.
Yeah, one last.
I got a headache. No offense to anybody.
Representative Allard.
Thank you. So how would a playground as a capital project bump above other capital projects in across the state? I mean, aren't there other schools that have more? I mean, I got a new roof at Homestead Elementary. How would this be a priority across the state to have a CIP? That just that's just allowed, that a playground takes precedence over, I don't know, roof?
Representative Allard, I think what we just heard from the commissioner is that it would not rank higher than those other projects. But when the school district received reimbursement from the state for other projects that did qualify and rank higher, they were then able to use some of those reimbursed funds.
Yeah, I just wanted her to repeat it on the record. Okay, so then my question would be that this
Representative Allard.
All right, just a comment then. So so at any point, Anchorage School District could have reimbursed the taxpayers, but instead they levied, bonded, got the money back from the state and said, you know what, we're going to put in savings and we're going to keep spending money, but we're not going to reimburse the taxpayer. That's what I heard. Okay, thank you. No more questions, Rick.
Thank you, Representative Allard. And since we're into comments, I'll just say that as someone with two very young children, I am very grateful for our investments in our schools and our playground equipment. Back to the presentation for a moment. Slide 13, if I could. Director Heineken, I wanted to ask a little bit about this first statement around the burger has evolved over 30 years to maintain fairness, transparency, and cost effectiveness. Can you tell me a little bit about what fairness means to you, Director, in terms of this process?
Thank you for the question, Chair Shragi. The intent is to have a very objective approach that is not based on subjective things within a district, like I'll just say academic performance or things of that nature, something that is available to all districts. I know that there has been conversation about the costliness of the applications, and that is, that does change the fairness, because not every district has the same financial resources. So that is one of the things that we have at the Burger Committee tried, that we are continuing to try to address, is to develop that fair and objective approach to the application.
Yeah, thank you, Director.
Based on facts.
Yeah, thank you, Director Heineken. That is partly where my mind is going, is that it is good to have a transparent process that's objective and, I won't say not gameable, because I think we've heard some concerns around how schools are able to advantage themselves in that process. But one of the concerns I have is that school districts do not have the means to submit projects for consideration. And I know that on the prior slide, we talked about giving more points for concept and schematic design, but I'm concerned that some school districts don't even have capacity to do that. Can you tell me, I had not really heard of Burger or this process in years prior. This is the first year that I've really honed in on it a little bit. Does the state, does DEED, does the Burger Committee have any role in evaluating school district and school facility conditions, or are we solely reliant on the school districts and the school operators to submit information on the condition of their facilities for consideration and scoring on the school major maintenance list?
To Chair Shragi, that is information that we rely on from the district to provide to us.
And have you all ever explored what it would take to play a more active role in scoring school facilities throughout our state?
To the Chair Shragi, I don't know that we've done we've had the conversation. Staffing would be an issue, and expertise that does require a whole host of different expertise than what we have on staff at the department.
Okay, thank you. We've got about 10 minutes before we need to adjourn, so we have some time still. I know Representative Hannon has a question. If we end up adjourning early, that's great too. But Representative Hannon, please.
Thank you, Chair Shragi. I actually didn't have a question, had a comment, and I wish my colleague from Eagle River was still here. In our community, we undertook a consolidation of schools and shuttered schools 3 years ago and turned what had been a middle school into a school that now houses our charter schools, which is a K-8 program, our Montessori, which is a K-8 program, our alternative high school. And as a result of that, there was not a playground because it was a middle school, but now you have all those young minds, and all pedagogy around education incorporates the importance of play as a primary and in significance in early learning. And certainly, I think for all of us, even as adults, more activity through your day stimulates your brain and your capacity. Our school board was kind of stuck in that they were divided over cost cutting and then what the expense to build a safe playground, and they undertook fundraising, et cetera. And it took our brave and bold borough assembly, who that final budget in all borough governments, it's not your school board, but your borough assembly, who had to authorize and say, it's okay to spend some of this money to get this completed because it's so important for the pedagogy of kids that we've put into a facility that doesn't adequately meet their needs by not having a playground for those young learners. And our school board had supporters to do that, but when they're cutting positions and shuttering buildings, for them to say, and we're going to build kindergartners a playground, some of our school board members couldn't say that, but our bold assembly encouraged them, and we are delivering on that. And I'm proud to say I was, their fundraising included buying bricks at it. And I think borough assemblies who understand their responsibility and role of education do that. They make sure they remind themselves they're the ones passing the budget. School boards bring them to the borough assemblies for final authorization. So I'm pleased that Anchorage put a playground at a school when it's needed, because it's important for young learners. Thank you, co-chair.
Put your hand in. Other questions from committee members? Not seeing any. One additional question from me, going back to slide 11. Proposed changes to the CIP application process. What is the timing on these changes, and when they're considered, when they're approved, if they are approved? Director Heineken, can you provide that information to me?
Sure, Co-Chair Shragi. So the CIP application is reviewed every April during the April Burger Committee. We have a 2-day meeting, and the committee members are presented with a collection of any proposed changes at that time, and we go through, we went through question by question and line by line and redlined it for approval and voted on that last week. Next, on the 28th and 29th, we will roll this application out at our CIP training, our meeting in Anchorage, where we invite all school districts, and we're going to offer a virtual option this year. So it's approved at the beginning of the month, and then we roll it out at the end of the month of April, so they have the most current version to apply for, and then the application is due on September 1st to the department, and then we evaluate them, and through that during that same time, we are collecting changes and proposals for the following application period. So as of today, we'll start collecting, or as of last week, we collect new changes for next year's application.
Okay, very good. Last chance for questions from committee members. Not seeing any. I want to thank Director Heineken, Mr. Budakoffer, Ms. Preston, and committee members, Commissioner Bishop as well, for being with us today and answering our questions. With that, our next meeting of the House Finance Committee is scheduled for tomorrow, Friday, April 10th at 9 a.m., where we will hear House Bill 193, Unemployment Benefits, Paid Parent Leave. With nothing else before the committee, we are adjourned at 2:40 p.m.